cross, and it was Bale. Oh, what about that? But Gerrard! You beauty!
I think it's all over. It is now.
Hello guys, welcome back to episode 5 of The Drop Ball. I'm delighted to say we have a returning guest. We have Adam Westwood with us.
Whoop whoop.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, mate. How are you?
Emphasis right, on the you. Guest.
So, oh, as you can hear there, we've got Joe Ash and we've got Nathan Hardin. How are we?
How are we? Not bad.
Good. Yeah. Today we're talking Premier League football and also Championship. We're going to touch upon what we did in episode 2, so our chosen teams. But kicking us off, is it St Mary's, Southampton versus Leicester? It was a thumping, wasn't it?
It was pretty amazing how quickly it went downhill for Southampton. The second they got red carded, Bertrand got red carded after the first goal went in, there was just no effort after that point. And being 40 minutes in, I think, when you got red carded, and the game already being basically over, it's pretty pathetic for a Premier League side, isn't it?
Should it have been a red card, you know, in those weather conditions that early on in the game?
Yeah, I think it's red card if you go by a letter of the law.
Yeah, I think it's a fair red card.
I can see why people are you trying to copy me? I can see why people would say, might have their counter-arguments, but I think you've got to have consistency, and players have got to be cautious regardless of the weather.
If anything, more extra cautious when it's that type of weather. And he obviously wasn't.
Yeah.
9-0 away from home is the biggest ever away defeat in Premier League history. Joint best, biggest ever defeat in Premier League history, full stop. And I think it was Southampton's biggest ever defeat. So just a shambles all over for them, weren't it?
It was embarrassing, really. I feel like they just rolled over. Obviously, 5-0 down at half-time. You could put some pride on your name if you put in at least a more valiant performance, even if you didn't score. But letting it get to 9, and I watched the game and it just looked like an exhibition, a kickabout with your friends, a training game, and some of the goals that went in were just beautiful as well. You can really appreciate like Madison's free kick. I think Chilwell was really good as well, but he just had the license to get to play as a left winger.
Well, that ball towards where he puts it in, it just floats over back post and Perez is there.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just having fun, weren't they?
Yeah.
I think it was Perez' best game in the Leicester shirt since he's joined.
His first goal was for the club, weren't it?
Yeah, and he's got a hat-trick as well. The second and third goal were taken really well as well. Yeah. I thought they were really good goals.
What about Vardy as well when he makes, I think it was Vestergaard, and just slapped it in? Like, that was a really nice goal that he scored. Obviously giving them the Southampton fans a shot, but the ones that were left there.
Yeah. I mean, you can't blame them, really. In that weather, where going sideways down into the crowd, 30 minutes, 3-0, 10 men. I mean, if you're ever going to leave early from a football game, that would be the one to do. Yeah.
Well, do you think they deserved a refund for it?
Yeah. I mean, they're giving it to charity. I think should have given it to the fans.
It was only like one day's wage. I think they probably could have provided a bit more. Going on purely how poor they were.
Yeah.
One day's wage is nothing to these players.
Yeah. Who stood out in the Leicester shirts for you guys?
Jose Perez massively for me. He's seemed a bit lost since he's joined Leicester. Like, being at Newcastle, he was the star man and everything went through him. So he had the creative freedom to create what he wanted and do what he wanted almost. But in this much better Leicester team, he's sort of having to play as part of a system, which I think he's not done for a while. And he finally seems to integrate properly into the team, getting a hat-trick.
Yeah, well, last year, as much as Rafa, really did get great quality out of those reserve, pretty limited players, like you say, Perez, it felt like it was just down to him and Rondon to try and create something out of nothing. We're seeing the same again with Steve Bruce, with the likes of Almiron and Joe Linton at Newcastle, sorry. But Leicester got a great coach, in my opinion, Brendan Rodgers, deserves a lot of credit. Spoke about him last week as well, and he really does seem to drill his teams well, and he's got them like a well-oiled machine.
On the other hand, you have to feel sorry for Ralf Hasenhüttl. I think he's taken complete responsibility for it, but there's no way the manager's gone out there and say, don't defend, don't track your runners, don't do this, don't do that. He's obviously has a certain way he wants them to play, but they have not executed anything he's said, and the players should take full responsibility for that.
Yeah, I mean, I do look at this. I said to Nathan after the game, I look at that team and I do struggle to see I think Hasenhüttl is a very good manager. We saw that at Leipzig. But the actual quality in that Southampton team, you know, years ago, they kept getting pinched, usually by Liverpool, of their best talent. I look at it now and I don't really know many of the starting 11 or people in the squad that bigger teams in the league would take. Is there anyone for you?
I don't think there's anyone. Their best player is probably Redmond.
Yeah.
And I don't think he gets in any top six, top eight team. No,
yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
If they went down, he's just going to go to a newly promoted team. They'd be at the same sort of level.
Yeah.
What can you expect, though, when for like the last 5 years you've stripped the club of all its biggest assets?
Yeah.
And the board have not really invested heavily, have they?
Mm.
And then this is the result. I mean, they've had, what was it, Pellegrino, Mark Hughes, Claude Puel, and now they're on Hasenhüttl. Yeah. Four completely different managers, and none of them seem to really be working.
It tells you that the squad, it's more internal in terms of, it might be those at the top of the club as well, but also the players just aren't up to scratch, really. I think they do have enough, just about enough quality to probably see them through.
Yeah,
but if a big injury to somebody like Redmond or Ings came along, and we know Ings is pretty...
He's pretty delicate, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been hit by quite a few injuries. There's nothing to stop them from dropping into that bottom three. By Christmas, they could be, you know...
They could be struggling.
Yeah,
I think one thing to mention, though, as much as Southampton were dreadful, Leicester were incredible on the pitch. Like, they didn't put a foot wrong all 90 minutes, and they kept pushing for more. Whereas you see a lot of... I'll talk about it later when I get to Man United. They have that clinical instinct at the minute, and they're just going for teams because they want to finish in the top four. And it's clear. I think performances like that are the sort of performances you need to be able to get to finish in the top four. Like, their goal difference has gone incredible now.
Yeah.
But those sort of performances are the ones you need against teams that are worse than you. And I wouldn't even say Southampton are one of the worst teams in the league.
I feel there's a real calmness at Leicester. I look when they take the goals. Yes, Southampton didn't make it too difficult for them, but especially Tielemans, I feel like he's been massive the last 12 months or so he's been here. Every time he's taken a goal, he's controlled it calmly and he's just placed it, but with power as well. And I think it shows a really good player that doesn't snatch at it.
They did excellently to keep hold of him.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would have improved any sort of... Maybe not got into Man City starting lineup, maybe not Liverpool's, but apart from that, I'm sure he would have.
The likes of United and
especially for
Arsenal.
40 million as well. That's not,
yeah.
In this day's market, that's not much. Yeah. Man United paid more than that for Fred, for example.
Still a very young player as well, even though he's been around, you know, what seems like quite a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to wrap it up, the Southampton travelled to the Etihad at the weekend, so not going to get any easier for them.
They've just been to the Etihad as well,
haven't they? Playing the League Cup.
3-1 defeat.
So it's not going to ease anything for Hasenhüttl. But I think he might hit a point where
good for him. It could really be good for him, Ben Plains. If they can get a result from City, and I mean even a draw, it suddenly changes maybe the way the fans are looking at their team right now.
Yeah.
I don't think they will get a draw. I think they'll get hammered. But at the same time, it would make a massive difference to the morale of the club.
On to Burnley versus Chelsea at Turf Moor. It ended 4-2 to Chelsea. Well deserved. I was watching the game again. And I said to Nathan and Adam, I called both times they were going to get two goals, and they did. And I just felt that we took our foot off the gas the last sort of half an hour.
Rodriguez's goals, man.
Yeah, great, great finish. You can't take anything away from him. Like, I don't think there's a keeper that would have stopped it.
No, I agree on that.
But just from a Chelsea fan's perspective, it's a really poor one to concede. Well, both of them were.
Stopped closing down people, didn't we, towards the end?
Should have been a clean sheet. Right?
Yeah, just got a little bit complacent, like, oh, well, we've won it already, which, yes, we had, but a 4-0 looks a lot better than a 4-2. It tells an onlooker that it was quite an even kind of game, that Chelsea just had too much quality, but what did you think?
I thought first 60, 70 minutes, we were excellent. You know, Pulisic he got his perfect hat-trick when he left foot, right foot, header.
Yeah.
And every time he got the ball, he was driving at the defence. He just gave Chelsea a new element, some pace. He just drove at the defence, wanted things to happen for himself. And, you know, he capitalised on a few defensive mistakes. Like, I'm not sure who the centre-back was. He took the ball, I think it might have been Tarkowski or Westwood in midfield. And then he drove it. Both his finishes were, like, proper, clean, clinical finishes. And then the header was a nice little one as well.
Yeah, I know people might say, oh, he might have fluked it, but... I don't necessarily think it was. And for somebody that's not usually in those sort of positions. I thought he took it really well.
Yeah.
Not just saying it because I'm a Chelsea fan, but I think I'd say the same if it was, you know, Danny James. Or
it seems like a really good sort of replacement for Willian in the next couple of seasons. Like, he seems like that's the sort of place that he'll be replacing in long term.
As with Hudson-Odoi on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bright future for Chelsea.
Yeah.
I don't think, obviously, we are, the main issue is that we've conceded the second most amount of goals in 2019 in the Premier League in away games. We're only second to Watford, and we all know how they played, obviously, the 8-0 to City. So it doesn't really bode well for our defence in away games.
I'm just looking at your mind.
That's the issue, which I've said to Nathan in particular, that I'm really enjoying the football, but it's just...
At the minute, I don't think it's a huge, huge problem, because we are scoring lots of goals and we are a young team and we are naive, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not great from set pieces defensively. Mm. Tomori has been probably the best young player, better than Abraham and Mount, I'd say. Yep. Like,
There's only five teams who have conceded as many or more than you this season. Mm. So that's probably somewhere where you could do with polishing it up.
We have started to improve, I'd say, because we've kept a few clean sheets now. Aspilicueta has finally come into form. Alonso, he's replaced Emerson pretty well. We'll be looking forward to when Rudiger gets back, and I think Tomori and Rudiger could be a very powerful physical.
I think you're really missing Rudiger, though. You're really missing an actual leader as a centre half.
Well, he was his best defender for the last 2 years.
Yeah, and that's people might say about the striker issue as well since Costa left, but I look at the centre back role as well. Since Terry left, it's been very difficult. Yes, we've won titles, but it's been difficult to get that continuity, because with Chelsea, usually there's so much change, players in, players out, managers in, managers out. It's difficult. So being able to have Lampard, who's coached Tomori last year, put him in the team and playing every week, it's really positive. And he does make mistakes. He keeps you on the edge of your seat because you don't know what's going to happen. We saw a couple of times against Ajax, I think it was, well, a little bit risky, but at least, you know, he's got the confidence at that young age to try things.
I think one thing you are missing this season, I mean, obviously Rudiger is that a little bit, but you are missing some proper experience in the back line. Like, I think losing Gary Cahill was a bit of a blow. I don't think he was like first team quality and should be starting every week for you, but I think having someone a bit more experienced in the back line who's won stuff with Chelsea, who's been there and done it, and sort of like just to like help Tomori develop in the next couple of like first few months of the season would have been really good and really beneficial for her.
I think one of the best areas of the pitch for us at the weekend was the midfield. Jorginho and Kovacic, they were in that double pivot, and the pair of them, I think they the most combination of passes between two players this season for any team. They're completely press resistant. Like, what, as soon as Burnley start pressing, they'll dribble their way out, they'll play a little intricate pass through, and then the pressure will be relieved. Both of them were just pinging passes, and Kovacic especially is the one that can dribble. He's got like a Hazard-esque dribble about him.
Yeah,
if only he could, like, you know, finish or add something at the other end, it'd be excellent. But I think both of them are brilliant.
Yeah, I rarely ever feel worried when they're on the ball. Sometimes you get those players that you think, you know, like David Luiz used to be like that, where he'd have the ball and I think, oh no, what's, you know, he could easily fumble this, give it to the, you know, the opposition. But with those two, you do feel in calm hands, especially against a side like last week against Ajax. Jorginho, I think, had a really impressive game in that one, with the likes of Tadic, Ziyech, Van der Beek all circling, pressing. They pressed quite high, Ajax. I think we did well in that one as well. Obviously, this was a different game, more physical against Burnley. Obviously, there was that early incident with Barnes, should have scored for them. That was concerning.
They hit the post as well from a corner.
Yeah, and Kepa made a really good save after a deflected shot. Being impressed with him, obviously, there was him and Sarri obviously didn't see eye to eye last year as he tried to become the coach in the cup final. But really good keeper, and he's actually pushing De Gea out of the Spain squad, like with starting 11.
I think in terms of form, I think it's fair at the minute. I don't think De Gea's probably going through his worst spell in the last three or four seasons at the moment, so I think it's fair.
I think Frank is doing a great job at the minute. He's got the boys
first name basis.
Yeah, me and Super Frank on a first name. he's got them playing like really well, attacking, exciting football. You know, there's a young, they got a spirit about them. They're a collective unit, and I think how he's man-managed the Pulisic situation, like at the start of the season, He had a few games in the team, didn't look physically or mentally ready, weren't really adjusted to the tactics or the Premier League. He's had a few, you know, cameo appearances over the last couple of months, and then he came off the bench against Ajax, changed the game completely, and then he's got his start and got his hat-trick. So I think, you know, he's finally adjusted, and I think Lampard's handled it brilliantly.
Yeah, well, as he highlighted, Pulisic did only have about 10 days off from international duty to then when pre-season began. So it is fair to give him some time off. We see with when Kane goes away to tournaments and Ali, etc., they don't look ready to and firing all cylinders to come back into the fold for their club team, you know, side.
There's so many players in the Premier League that need those sort of breaks at the minute.
Rashford,
literally prime example. Yeah. I was going to say, because he's not been injured for such a long time, and he's been, especially in the last few weeks with our sort of like dip in form, especially, he's been the player we've been relying on, and he's been in bad form anyway. So trying to have, like, being forced to rely on a player in bad form, and then he has to go then play for his country. Like, he's came back, and since Martial's been fit, he seems to be playing a lot better. With that partnership, they seem to be really good, but players like him could really do with a few days, at least like a couple of weeks just off to chill out.
Just want to quickly touch upon the VAR decision. If we can keep this brief, obviously, but involving Hudson-Odoi. At first, when we were watching it live, I said, right, no, there's no contact from Tarkowski. Watching it again from the different angles, slowing it down, it's actually Lowton that the officials should be watching. The push, and there's a little clip on the ankle as well. Like, I don't... At the end of the day, like they say, he's running at speed. If you feel the way that his body's positioned as well, if you get a push in the lower part of your back, you are likely to go to ground. I don't think it's a dive. Might not be enough for a foul, but I don't think it's a dive.
I don't think it was a dive. He did probably over-egg it a little bit. But when you're a young player who's just come back from a lengthy injury and you feel a bit of a... You're going to go down because you're not going to want to pick up the injury potentially. So, yeah, I don't think it was a dive. Maybe not a pen, but I thought a yellow card was harsh.
Yeah, I think him getting a booking for simulation was unfair. I think it could have definitely been... I think it should have been given as a penalty for me. Because there was two smaller fouls. Like, neither of them, if they were on their own, they weren't big enough to be a foul. But both of them together at the same time, I think, do make a full foul on the guy. I mean, being tripped up and pushed at the same time, you're going to fall over no matter. Yeah. Especially if you're running at speed as well. So, I mean, for me, it was a penalty. But I think it's just another VAR mistake, and we have to keep coming back to this every single week.
Well, yeah, and what it's doing is it's dividing us even more. The interview after the post-match interview from Sean Dyche was basically slamming Hudson-Odoi, saying this needs to stop, like, diving is a serious issue, that there should be more than just a booking. Well, if VAR didn't get muddled up and we could see that it was actually contact, maybe it wasn't a penalty, as we said,
but then
we wouldn't, because then people are listening
to it. I can't wait for a Burnley player to dive and then see what Sean Dyche has to say, because every week he's got something to moan about, hasn't he?
To be fair to him though, he won't have seen at that point in the post-match interview, he won't have seen the replays, because that's one of the biggest issues with VAR. I think, you know, I don't know if you've been to any games where VAR has been used.
I've not this season.
Yeah, no.
When you sit there whilst the referee's deciding, you do not know what is happening. So they should at least have, you know, when you're watching it at home and it shows you what the VAR officials are looking at, they should play that on the big screen at the ground.
Yeah. Well, what they say to that is, if they're putting contentious decisions on the screen, then it's going to cause fracturous reactions from the crowd, and the crowd, you know, because the away fans and the home fans are going to start getting aggy at decisions, and
but they are anyway.
I know what you're saying.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
They don't show goals, do they?
No,
they don't show the goals because they know
they do. At Bramall Lane, they do. I think they do at least. Yeah, but I'm pretty sure.
At Stamford Bridge, they did. When I went last season.
Well, plastic fan.
I'm just saying, when I've been to watch England, they've not shown the goals because of the, you know, the away fans. The way international fans are just going to cause...
Each ground's going to be different. But I just want to add that Chelsea have won their last six away games in all competitions. Only once in their history have they won it more consecutively on the road, and that was in 1989. So, positive stuff. As much as we are conceding a lot of goals, it's good to have such momentum away from home.
Who have you got next? Obviously, you've got Man United in the Cup tonight, but who have you got in the league?
Off the top of your head? Do you know off the top of your head?
I'll get it up for you now if you want. But
it's away at Watford. Half five
Saturday
kick off,
night.
I think.
Yeah,
that should be a solid win probably as well.
You never know though. But next game, Brighton versus Everton. Seagulls took the lead early on via Gross from a free kick. Pickford, we don't want to keep slamming him. but it's relevant because we are England fans. So he was at fault, in my opinion, for this goal. He set up the wall to leave an intentional gap, but the ball came right through that gap towards him, and he just didn't get a strong enough hand on it.
It was powerful, but he should do so much better.
Yeah, he likes to punch anyway, so he probably should have punched this.
We hear it every week, though, don't we, at this point? Oh, Pickford's made a mistake. Pickford's not saved this. Every week we're getting it.
Guarantee that when international break comes around in about 2 weeks' time, he will be England's number one again. Because
Southgate's man, isn't he?
Southgate picks them on form, doesn't he? He definitely picks, because Everton are sitting pretty where are they?
16th. Yeah, it's looking bleak.
And let's face it, it isn't like a Man United situation, maybe, where the defence and the whole team are letting the keeper down. Pickford has made multiple mistakes this season against Brighton now.
Yeah.
Southgate needs to come out and actually back up what he's saying in terms of picking players based on form.
Yeah. You know, this is obviously going to make Joe really excited, but if you are picking players off form, you'd pick
United
Henderson.
Pope.
You'd pick Henderson because they've got the most clean sheets in the league.
That means just because a keeper's got more clean sheets doesn't mean he's better keeper.
Pick Jack O'Connell then. If we're on a, like...
What?
Pick Jack O'Connell.
You're going to put him in goal, are you?
No, I mean for the England squad. Because are you suggesting that clean sheet's not always down to the goalkeeper? Yeah?
I'm suggesting clean sheet stats don't tell the full picture.
I think I agree with you. I would put Pope and then Dino, in my opinion. I would go Pope.
I'm saying give
Dino.
Them both the go.
Yeah, I would,
I'm
say, saying I would
while,
say that.
While they're still friendly. Like, while they're, I mean, they're not friendly.
Friendly, yeah.
I mean, we've basically already secured like the
qualification.
We've played the hardest team in the group.
At this point, it should be experimenting with the team to see what new things are going to work out for the tournament, because we're not going to have this sort of chance we're leading up at the end of the season.
Like, I agree.
So
I agree
now is the sort of games to be throwing Dino in, seeing like, just give him
I'd
a go.
I'd agree with Nathan.
Give Pope a go.
I think that Pope is... I would pick Pope to be number one over Pickford, but I would also like... I would be happy if in this international break, I think we've got... Is it Montenegro and Kosovo? I think the two teams we've got. I would be happy if he literally played a game with Pope and then a game with Dino.
I think that's
or
fair.
Let's say if there's 80 minutes left in a game and he's got two subs left, just I know maybe not as a sub because or maybe at half time, not 80 minutes, but I think he should give them some experience.
I think he's pretty set on his back four, and I think that the back four, I mean, he'll have Stones in there next to Maguire. We know that. I mean, Mings played well, but
Keane, on the other hand, didn't.
Yeah, Keane can get lost.
Because he, going back to this game as well, he was kind of, I thought it was really harsh. Don't know if you guys caught it. but he trod on the ankle of Connolly, went to VAR.
Never a penalty, really.
It's very harsh because he's not looking at the player. He's not malicious.
He's just trying to get the win.
Yeah, and it's the slightest bit. I know it might have come Keane, but it's really... see what I did. It was very minuscule contact, and for that to change the sway of a game, which it did. Obviously, Mope scored the penalty.
They then make it 2-2, weren't it?
Yeah, and then they went on in the 94th minute and own goal from Luca Dean.
And it was a poor own goal as well.
I did like how they set that up, though. You know that big, like, 6'5" Dan Burn.
Yeah.
He's always bursting forward, isn't he?
I know he's 6'7". He's playing left back.
Is he 6'7"? He's huge. He's
left
like,
back as well.
Towers over everyone. And I think he just played an outside pass to Trossard, who then whipped it in, aimed for Murray, but it was Dina who...
He was really good after coming off the bench, Trossard. He is good quality. Signing from the.
Do you reckon
Belgium.
Everton could be... potential relegation
fodder
this season.
100%. No.
I don't think
they'd get relegated. I think at the moment they're in a poor form, but I can't see them getting relegated.
I think they're going to improve. I think they're going to improve, but I think at this stage of the season we've already had a quarter of the games played. And at this stage, like, if Man United was still in this, if we hadn't gone and had this massive jump from like 14th to 7th this weekend, if this was 2 or 3 weeks' time and we're still in 14th position, you are in term relegation candidates. And if they are sat in the relegation zone right now, they deserve to be there. They've been very poor, every game they've had this season. I can't see them improving in the immediate future. Like, they're going to have to do a lot of reworking in January to sort of get decent and sort of struggle out of it.
I don't like Marco Silva as a manager. I don't think he's done enough at Hull and Watford to then... warrant a big job like Everton, and he's clearly not showing anything positive, really. I mean, last week we were praising their performance against West Ham, and that is the problem. They'll have one good game, three bad, and you need nice
consistency.
I don't think saying that the season's a quarter of the way through is viable anyway, because let's face it, just using an example here, at the moment I've heard talk that Sheffield United are definitely going to stay up. They're definitely going to stay up now. They can easily have one, with how tight the table is after 10 games, they could easily have a month which is really poor and find themselves 16th, 17th. And that is a big issue which some teams like United and maybe like Brighton might have, where they could easily just have a run of form which lets them down.
No, I get where you're coming from, but I think that they have had, I don't think they've had the hardest run of fixtures just so far. Like they've still got quite a few big games left to come before the second half of the season starts. So I think if you're saying that, like,
right. To be fair, that is a good point. They've played of the top six sides. Mm. They've played City.
Yeah,
that's it. So they've still got got a lot of horrible fixtures.
Merseyside derbies,
United and Villa.
At that point, if they're at this stage without the big six played, let's say if they lose the rest of the five against the big six left, that's already 15 points down the toilet.
Is it?
At that stage, you're thinking, well, they're going to be relegation candidates if they've struggled this much against lower half of the table.
And I think they're fortunate that the table is so tight that a couple of wins could take you up to, you know, 10th or something like that. Because if teams really built a bridge between them and Everton, they could be isolated. And it goes back to my point that I made, I think it was 2 weeks ago, about how there's so much change at Everton where they get through so many players, they bring a lot of the similar, you know, number 10s in, or like strikers that just end up flopping like Tosun. Do we not remember a couple of years ago when they had, was it Unsworth come in as caretaker, and then they had Allardyce? That was when they were left by Coman at about 16th, 17th. They were in the drop zone. And it's just, I'm struggling to see any difference from there. And some of the signings they made are promising. Richarlison's come in since then. Yes, they've lost Gay, but they've got André Gómez, who played for Barcelona and was very good at Valencia. You know,
and it's not like they've not shown intent either. Like they've put in a lot. They put a lot of money down on Moise Keane as well. Like,
well,
I know they've not really. I know they don't think he's ready to play like Premier League football yet. But even so, like putting that intent down and buying a player of his, like of his prospect, it's showing your intent in the league and like going to push for like towards Europa. You'd think, but here they are struggling at the bottom. So
must have spent at least 150 million for like the last two or three seasons, and in them 3 years, nothing's changed.
Well, they're
if anything, they've got worse.
They're very soft. I've got a stat here. So they failed to win any of the 24 Premier League games in which they've fallen behind under Silva. So they've drawn four of them and lost 20. So you get a lead against them, you're likely to end up coming out with the 3 points.
I think they've got Spurs at the weekend, which two teams in not great form. So that's going to be an interesting.
They've got a hope that their reasonable home form at Goodison will get them through in that one, but I could see maybe a draw for that one.
They've got their December is tough as well. They've got Leicester, Liverpool, Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal all in one row.
We could be seeing Everton in the bottom three again by New Year, in my opinion.
Easily, yeah.
So moving.
Definitely.
Moving on to Arsenal versus Palace, two sides who are in the top half. And
what an interesting game this was, eh?
Well, it was centred around the moment in the 61st minute, wasn't it, when Xhaka was subbed off. It began when he kind of like chucked the armband to his teammate, his captain armband, proceeded to saunter off the pitch. Obviously, when the fans saw his number, they did cheer, ironically, because they kind of felt that he wasn't pulling his weight, deserving of his captaincy and starting most games. But it was a weird one. He must have felt the pressure beforehand to start walking off the pitch when it was 2-2, despite having a lead of 2-0. And then obviously telling them to F off. Doesn't do any good.
He walked past Unai Emery, didn't shake his hand or anything. Just walked straight past Unai. Like, Unai went to like high five him, like shake his hand, and he just walked straight through him. So
he didn't throw his shirt on the floor, to be fair. He took it off. But I think if he'd have thrown that shirt on the floor, I think already him and the Arsenal fans are never going to ever get on again. But if he'd have thrown that shirt on the floor, I think that genuinely would have been like...
To be fair, I don't even think it matters about if you throw it or if you just drop it. I think still just dropping it on the floor not showing any.
Did he even drop
any,
it? I think he did drop it.
Yeah, he did. As he went down the tunnel, he just dropped it. I just think that it shows disrespect, really, and the fans
paying the wages. Yeah, yeah. And at the end of the day,
once you get on the wrong side of them, they're not a forgiving bunch.
Almost feel bad for Arsenal fans in a way. Like some of their captains have done some horrible things. Like obviously Koscielny over the summer, taking off the Arsenal shirt to have the Bordeaux shirt underneath.
Yep.
You've then had Van Persie leaving them for us. You had Fabregas leaving it. Like there's been so many captains that have almost disrespected the Arsenal fans.
But at the same time, Arsenal fans have to be one of the most toxic group of fans you will find.
This is what I was about to say, because it's almost like since Xhaka's been a member of, like since he's been a member of the club, he's been like he's had death threats sent his way because his form's not been good enough. He's had like so many things happen to him, and every time it's just like thrown back, like he's just got to like go out there and perform and like play a game of football.
It's difficult to do it when people are on your back, when you're, you know,
and especially when I don't think he's ready to be captain at all. And obviously Emery, it was quite public knowledge that he gave it to a fan vote to decide, like a player vote, to decide the captain, and the players picked Xhaka. But then it seems like he almost isn't ready to be that.
You look inside that club and you don't really see any leaders. You might say Socrates, but
I think the biggest leader you'd probably say would be Guendouzi. Because he shows the passion which the fans like, they love him because he shows the passion of the fight every game. But
it's a lot
to
ask.
Is he a captain?
Yeah.
He's
20
year old. I think this again comes back to Unai Emery though, not being good enough to be an Arsenal manager. Personally, for me, I think not having the gut to pick a captain. Like I can't say that our captain's amazing with Ashley Young, like in terms of his on the pitch performances. But you can show that he at least loves the club and he's trying his best every single week, even if he's being played out of position still. But like, Emery has, I think his win-loss record is worse. He's now played the amount of games, like in the games that he's been his manager, the same amount of games when Wenger left, he's lost more. So his record since he's taken over is worse than Wenger's before he was sacked is.
The same length of games.
There we go. Couldn't get my words out there.
Yeah, he came out after the game as well, didn't he? And said that Xhaka was wrong for what he did. And it was a really good start from Arsenal. Two early goals from corners, which was unusual.
Both centre-backs.
Yeah, Socrates and Luiz. There was obviously, they then let them back into it with two very easy goals for them.
Zaha was, Milivojevic, it's penalty. Zaha skipped into the box and Chambers stuck his leg out. A clear and obvious penalty.
Yeah.
Originally, the ref gave it as a dive and a yellow.
Yeah.
But after VAR rescinded it.
And there was that talking point later in the game, wasn't there, when Socrates thought he had the winner, but they deemed Chambers to have fouled one of the players, Milivojevic, or even though Cahill did actually make contact with him. If I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be fuming at that. I feel like it's way too soft.
Very.
You know, it's basically saying you can't have any contact in the box. Nothing. And yeah, so for me, Arsenal were unlucky, but they need to, if they want to get top four, they need to be able to grind out results or just outscore their team like Chelsea are doing.
2-0 up against Palace, you expect to go on and win that game, but to let Palace back in and get two goals, I think the second goal was MacArthur put a ball, weren't closed down by Xhaka, put a ball over, and I think Guendouzi was just watching it and Ayew just heads home, and it's poor defending again. I don't think the midfield of Xhaka and Guendouzi really works, or they don't bring the best out of each other. I don't know why they signed Torreira.
Yeah,
that's what they've been crying out for. But
they play him out of position. They play him as like a number 10 almost.
Yeah, they don't play him how they're meant to play him at all.
He's a defensive midfielder. Him and Guendouzi would be great together. And then have someone like Ceballos a little bit ahead who could have the creative freedom to do what he wants.
Yeah, because he actually defends a lot as well, Ceballos. And a lot of the issue with Arsenal is great forwards, but a lot of them won't put in the defensive shift like Aubameyang or Pepe. But I feel like if you play Ceballos, he's going to act as that third midfielder, central midfielder that will drop in and help out when needs be, but also have creativity to launch attacks.
My problem with Arsenal is they've got the players that can get in behind, make the runs, score the goals, you know, your Lacazettes and your Aubameyangs, but they've got no one to feed them. Like, obviously, he's Emery's ostracised Mesut Ozil from the squad. And I know everyone has slated Ozil for about 5 years, how he doesn't turn up for the big games, always goes missing, this and that. I think he played against Watford and got an assist. And obviously, that was a poor game from Arsenal all over. But he did provide, you know, some ammunition for the forwards. And like you say, Ceballos is another player who I think it was like second or third game this season where he got two assists and a goal, something like that. and he helped turn the game for Arsenal. And these are the players you need to look for to provide, you know, the ammunition for the strikers. But at the minute, he's not playing either of them, and they do look quite lacklustre with their youngsters like Willock and who's the other one? Bakayo
Saka. Yeah,
they just look talented enough, but are they ready to lift Arsenal through
big pressure?
As I mentioned a minute earlier, I don't think that Unai Emery is the right man to be the Arsenal manager, but right today there's been reports from ESPN saying that Mourinho may be in talks to be the next Arsenal manager.
Could you imagine
that? I want your first. So obviously with United and Chelsea fans here in the room, both had Mourinho as our manager.
I mean,
I don't think he's gonna. I think it's a complete joke. I think we can say
myself and Nathan could say we'd hate to see it.
So would I. I think it's a silly rumor.
Whether he'd steady the ship, maybe, but is there?
What would Wenger have to say about that?
Yeah,
his former foe taking his job.
Yeah,
I think it's just a silly rumor, but they're going to need someone like that to sort of sort out what's going on wrong. Like,
yeah,
I think there could be more issues with Arsenal than there is with Man United at the moment. Mm. Personally, for me,
yeah.
You're really stumped now, aren't you?
No, I'm just thinking, like, Mourinho is always given, like, touted for those jobs. You just know that his name will be, like, last week it was Dortmund.
He is the biggest current, like, I'd say he's probably the biggest manager that's available at the minute.
But in terms of quality, I wouldn't say so, because Allegri, he's out there. Marcelino's a good manager.
They're good managers, but I think that you've just got to say, like, the success track record of...
But then
the only club he's never won a league at is United.
I know, but then that's the most recent job. So
yeah,
I take Allegri over, but whether he wants to go to Arsenal. I thought really impressive display from Palace keeper Wayne Hennessy as well. Obviously, there was all that off the field, the incidents that went down on his Twitter or his Instagram, I think it was. But put in a really good performance in this game, kept Arsenal just to the two goals. And it leaves Arsenal fifth, which I'm surprised by, and Palace sixth. And big shout out to Roy Hodgson as well, working wonders with that team. On to Liverpool versus Spurs. 2-1 it finished after Spurs scored really early. Nathan?
It was a nice early goal for Spurs, and Kane, he scores all sorts of goals. This was another great classic Kane sort of finish. And at that point you think, okay, Spurs, it's 1 minute in. Have you scored too early? Are you going to be able to hang on? Are you going to be able to, play football? But there was points in this game where Liverpool just pummeled Spurs relentlessly. Spurs couldn't get out their own half. And you just knew Liverpool were eventually going to be able to crack the Spurs defence. I think they played Eriksen in a wide area and Son in a wide area. Yeah. And they basically tucked in as fullbacks to create like a back six. But it was still very narrow, which allowed Robertson and Arnold plenty of time and space in the wide areas to deliver, and Arnold was delivering. I think in commentary, Neville or Carragher, whoever it was, described him as De Bruyne-esque passes from Arnold.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what you do there is, we've set up a game plan to try and restrict Robertson and Alexander Arnold, but you tucking in is literally playing into their game plan. Liverpool's game plan, great side, but you don't often see a lot of creativity from the midfield. They're more just workmen, like, Henderson, Milner, Fabinho. Fabinho, I thought, was really good. He's probably the most creative out of those three that I've just listed. But if you allow the ball to go out wide, they've got the fullbacks who will punish you, and you've also got the forwards, two of the hottest talents.
Did you hear what Roy Keane said about Rose and Aurier?
Muppets.
He said Muppets, called them dumb and dumber, and they're not Premier League quality. Yeah.
Well, he's not
really. I don't think he's wrong.
We've seen how many times Aurier is, well, he did it in this one.
Yeah.
He gave away, he just booted the Mane's leg.
He did well to try and get back and then completely...
You need to have a bit of awareness about who's around you. You can't just swing your leg like that. He's given a few away already this season, and he did last year. And I don't think he's really wanted by Pochettino. Like, who would really want somebody that's like a wild...
But why... I know Trippier had loads of stick, and I think we've already mentioned this on a previous episode, but why sell him and... only stick with Aurier, and then who's the other, Walker Peters?
And they were hoping for Juan Foyt to turn into a right back, but when I watched him in pre-season, he even looked quite rigid because he is naturally a centre back.
I had them put in talks of, obviously, because they bought Ryan Sessegnon on a deadline day, of pushing him back to a left back like he's played before. But I don't, he works better as a winger.
I think that would only work if they played five at the back, which they have experimented with. But having him, if you're on about trying to push for top four, and you've got Sessegnon, who was decent, you know, a decent winger at Fulham, but then putting him into a top four challenging side, plus putting him left back, I think that he might prove me wrong, but that could really leave the defence exposed. And people like Davinson Sanchez, I think, is wild as well. I think he's very raw still.
There's too many contractual problems at the minute.
With Eriksen.
I think Vertonghen still.
Alderweireld still.
Which are there pretty, apart from Kane and Ali, they're their three biggest players.
Well, they keeps coming talk that there was actually a bust up.
Yeah, I've had this as well, but I obviously can't.
Whether it's paper talk, just because, you know, they put two and two together. But obviously,
those are the biggest problems with the squad, though, because those three players, obviously, they're not playing the centre backs as much. But Eriksen doesn't seem to be, Hart doesn't seem to be there anymore. He wants to move. I think he wants to go to Madrid, probably.
Yeah.
And I think they're sort of crying out for him as well at the minute. But he just seems to have, like, his ethic, like his work rate's gone down. He doesn't seem like his head's all there, and neither with the centre backs as well. So it just seems like everything's sort of going wrong for Spurs at the minute, and Poch isn't really doing anything to put it right.
Yeah, and it obviously could have been different if Son had scored, you know, when he rounded Alisson, hit the bar. But you know, they are a bit soft. You know, they go away to the sides. I mean, a draw would have been more than, you know, a result for them, but it means that Liverpool continue to dictate at the top, and City apply pressure, but, you know, still chasing them.
Again, it's 6 points at the top. Until City lose to Liverpool, I refuse to admit that Liverpool are
experts at slipping up. That's not like a Gerrard joke either. They just do. They just do. They've thrown away vital leads at the top of the table several times. So,
yeah, we're gonna introduce a fun little section here. It's Norwich versus Man U. Obviously, Adam missed last week. I'm going to have one of the other lads time it. And I'm going to say to Adam, I want a minute for you.
What? 1 minute timer?
Want a 1 minute timer? Yeah. 1 minute timer with a countdown clock.
Yeah, so we're going to go for it. We're going to give Adam a minute.
I'm saying a minute. Put a timer on and then you just let
me know.
He's
going to cover.
Give me like a 30 second and then like a 15 second and then cut it down 5 to 0.
Yeah, we want to hear about the game. Good enough detail, no mumble
when
jumble.
A minute hits, you're off.
Are you going to ask me questions after that?
No,
or just
you're
fair
off.
Enough?
Yeah. Right, Adam, are you okay? You ready?
I am ready.
Three, two, one, go.
So in the last few games, it's been a clear improvement. There seems to be a bit more of a plan. I think the formation changed from a 3-5-2 to a 4-2-3-1, which we've used quite a lot this season, and I don't think is our best formation. It's a 3-1 win, which on paper sounds great, but I think it could have been a lot more. There was a lot of chances in the game, and we dictated a lot of the game, but we're not as clinical as a team like Leicester in a game like this against a worse opponent to capitalise more. Their consolation I don't think was deserved either. We had two penalties in the game, both saved by Tim Krul. The first by Rashford was dreadful, it just wasn't good enough. And Tim Krul's a wind-up match when it comes to penalties. I called it to Will, a Newcastle fan we were watching the game with. He went to the right-hand side, and Martial then saw that and went to the right-hand side and saved the second one. Goals from McSauce, Rashford and Martial. The third goal, the Martial goal, was really good, really well set up by it. Rashford seems to have got his confidence back as well, goal and assist. It was a really good game in total. Getting a win against a team like Norwich is...
Okay, stop. Okay, so what's the next
thing? No, very impressive, Adam. Needed. Yeah, so... Nice one.
And I was just going to say as well, up to seventh place. We're up to seventh place.
We're on a minute, so...
Okay.
Just shout out to Tim Krul as well.
Best penalty saver in the world, in my
opinion. T's penalty saves, and I think he made some great saves in this game as well.
If it wasn't for him, if they had a different keeper in, I think it would have been a bit more of a thrashing.
But showing, you know, United going up to seventh after that win, it just does show and highlight how tight the Premier League is at the minute.
Yeah, we can easily slip into the top like.
They are
four
still level on points, though, with West Ham, Sheffield United, and Bournemouth.
That's what I mean.
So
we've got Bournemouth this weekend as well. So we've got Bournemouth on Saturday. It's gonna be probably one of the toughest games we've got.
Okay, now we move on to the Championship. Three episodes ago, we all picked a team who we thought were either doing really well or not so much, and we broke them down and gave you guys a bit of analysis. We're kicking it off with Sheffield Wednesday.
So since I last reviewed them, they've won one game and they've drawn two. They got a draw away at Cardiff, and then their last two games, they've had a 1-0 win at home against Stoke, and then a 0-0 draw this just weekend gone against Leeds. That was a man of the match performance from Kieran Westwood, who pulled out some sublime saves to keep them in the game. They're currently sitting in fifth place, so they've finally got into the promotion at the playoff spot I was talking about last time. And they're currently 3 points away from top of the table, but they're also 1 point away from dropping out of the playoffs. It's very tight in the Championship at the minute. And coming up just before the international break, they've got some really difficult fixtures. They've got a game against Blackburn, who are currently sat middle of the table. But just before the international break, they've got Swansea, who are currently sat just above them in fourth. And then straight after that, they've then got West Brom after the international break, who are top of the table. So in their next three games, they've got two of their promotion rivals. So it's going to be quite a tough time down at Hillsborough. But if they can get out of those next two games, if they can get about 5 points, that should be good enough. I think they probably will lose to West Brom because they're the best team in the league and deservedly a top of the table. But they may be able to squeeze a win against Swansea. It's sort of their thing to get.
So from a defensive standpoint, Wednesday are very strong as well. Like
they don't concede a lot.
They've conceded 10 goals, which is basically the only team who've conceded less is Leeds. One statistic I did see about Wednesday is technically in 2019, in the whole of it, they've kept the most clean sheets. Granted, second place is Sheffield United, who have played 14 less Championship games. But still, that's still saying
she
something.
She wants them in there.
Because Wednesday didn't really They performed decently at the end of last season.
With Steve Bruce.
Yeah, but literally they needed 4 more weeks maybe where they'd performed and they probably would have got into the playoff spots because they kind of rallied near the end of last season. I wouldn't be surprised if they get into the playoff spots this season. And I'm not a Wednesday fan, but I think really? It would be nice
would
if both Sheffield teams
Sheffield,
were in
Sheffield derby in the Premier League.
Nathan could win his money back as well.
Like, it would be nice to see because it's like United really don't really have that. The biggest rivalry they've got in the Premier League at the moment is West Ham, and that's for personal reasons as opposed to like geographical.
Do we all think Gary Monk?
I think he's
kicked
for the job.
Them on.
Yeah,
yeah.
Seems like
I thought he was all right. I thought he was all right at Swansea when he first became coach. I never thought he was a bad manager, but I think now he's had a bit more experience and he's sort of figuring out the sort of style he wants to play with his teams. He seems to know how to set up defensively. They're keeping a lot of clean sheets. Kieran Westwood's been really well in goal for them this season. He's probably going to be in the team of the season at the end of the year, as the season of a whole. But
hot take,
yeah, it's obviously the namesake. Obviously, got the last name Westwood. It must be a G, but. No, he was the man of the match at the weekend against Leeds, and he deservedly so. He kept them in the game. Patrick Bamford had a header that was going to go. It looked like it was going bottom corner, and somehow out of nowhere he just flicks it out. It's an amazing save.
Well, talking about Leeds, since I last reviewed them, they just lost to Millwall away. They got a 1-0 win against Birmingham, and then drew 1-1 with Preston, which it was away at Preston, which is a decent result. Bear in mind, Preston are second, and they are at the moment one of the teams who are pushing for that promotion spot. And then obviously the 0-0 draw against Wednesday. One thing which stood out a lot against Preston, I think I touched upon it on last time, is that Leeds seemed to concede a considerable high amount of goals and score a lot of goals in the last 10 minutes or so, and this game wasn't any different. In the last 15 minutes, they conceded and scored. And still, one of their biggest issues is the fact that they had 22 shots and 3 on target, and that's can be seen, I think, in the Birmingham game as well. It was a similar statistics. But, yeah, they had a quarter of their shots on target. They just need to get a bit more clinical. And you'll probably... I have no doubt that Leeds probably will. Leeds and West Brom last season, I think, were awfully unlucky to miss out on getting... Well, if it hadn't been for United and Norwich, they'd have got the automatic spots. I know that's obvious because those are the two who went up. But West Brom, I know we're not talking about West Brom here, we're talking about Leeds, but West Brom and Leeds both performed extremely well. If it wasn't for a bad set of results for Leeds last season, they might have been looking at automatic promotion. They didn't go into playoffs with the greatest record because they'd messed up a good amount of times in the lead up to the playoffs. They'd given away, similar to what Westwood said, about Liverpool, they just slip up. I don't know what it is. Amazon Prime made a documentary about Leeds trying to get promoted. Like, It is. They're making one about Tottenham as well, not winning the Champions League. It's just a little bit. They just need someone who can clinically. They need someone like Billy Sharp, because in the Championship, someone like Billy Sharp was scoring a lot of goals, and they just don't seem to have someone who can clinically finish as well, as other players.
I've been impressed with that Eddie Nketiah, but he always seems to play Bamford over him, because apparently he works harder or does more in general for the team. But Nketiah is a goal scorer, and
And they missed that with Kemar Roof going to Anderlecht. I thought he seemed to work hard and also score quite a few goals, so maybe he's trying to get that same output from those two, but maybe give Nketiah a go. He must be in the Arsenal Academy for a reason.
Well, he brought him on for Bamford in this game, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that is the change they always make.
Yeah, because I think personally Bamford's overrated. Based on what I saw last season, he was just... I know you guys say it with Courtois a lot, but I think this season he's dived a couple of times, or he's over-exaggerated certain things, and I think he's the wrong football player kids should be looking up to.
What's Leeds' defence like? Because they lost Pontus Janssen.
Well, they've conceded the most least amount of goals in the league, I'm pretty sure. They've conceded 8.
Yeah,
I think that's
They've conceded 8 goals and scored 17. And after 14 games, that's a very good set of results. As I said, Wednesday are the only... I think they've kept 14 clean sheets, Leeds have, in the whole of 2019, championship-wise. Which has surprised me, because as you said... When United played him last season, Pontus Janssen was a very big. He was quite hard to deal with.
Leader.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they don't seem to be missing him one bit.
Yeah. Down to the Potteries, Nathan. How are Stoke doing? They're still rock bottom.
They're second from bottom at the minute. Just level on points with Barnsley, but ahead on goal difference. Last time we checked in with them, they'd just recorded their first win of the season away at Swansea. That was after 8 defeats and 2 draws before that. But since then, they got back-to-back wins, including that Swansea one, because they then went to play at home against Fulham. Tyrese Campbell and a Lee Gregory penalty made it 2-0. But since then, a 1-0 defeat at Wednesday and a 2-0 defeat at Millwall has sent them back down. And basically, their little mini-revival is over. They've got November 4th is at home against West Brom, which is going to be very tough. After that, they've got Barnsley away, which is must win, really, for both of them teams. Wigan at home, Blackburn at home are both winnable games, teams in and around the relegation, which they're going to have to look at and get, you know, at least a win or two there. And then Cardiff away will be very tough as well. So, in about 5 games' time, they could easily still be down right at the bottom, because they're not performing as they're meant to perform, to be honest.
What do you think that is? Do you reckon it's due to them not scoring enough, or?
I think it's down to the way they try to play. Nathan Jones has basically stuck with his diamond throughout the whole season, including at the end of last season, and it just doesn't work, because the fullbacks aren't positive, you know, attacking fullbacks. They're basically converted centre backs, and. They're not scoring enough goals.
You'd expect them to, with the likes of Clucas and McLean, and I think Joe Allen's still there.
There's a great statistic, the fact that in all competitions, the amount of games it's been since Stoke last scored 3 or more goals, they've not scored 3 or more goals in 87 games.
That's shocking, to be honest.
Nearly triple the amount of the team who were closest to them, which is Bolton.
Do you know who that game was against?
I can't get it up off. But
to think as well that they've been in the Championship for almost a season and a quarter.
This is obviously not including friendlies and
they've been in the Championship for, you know, it's going to be 2 seasons, and they went down with some really good players. You know, Atebo, they signed him when they went down, the Nigerian international. McLean, Clucas, all, you know, done it in the Premier League.
Joe Allen's a really good centre midfielder as well.
Expect that creativity to be able to supply goals in that team.
I think Nathan Jones, on the whole, is a good manager, but it's just not working for him at Stoke for whatever reason, and the board don't seem to be getting him, moving him on at all. I think they did get their 2 wins, and you thought, oh, this could be a turning point, then it's gone straight back down. You would hope the board are looking at different managers and waiting for an opportunity to pounce on the right one, because if they stick with Nathan Jones, I don't think they're going to be able to survive, to be honest.
Going back to what Westwood said, or Adam, sorry, I think I've found a game where they scored three or more, and it was back when we were in the Prem, Christmas time of 2017, and it was a 3-1 win over West Brom.
Hey guys, really hope you enjoyed episode 5 of the Drop Ball. Unfortunately, we did have some issues with the files, so my part on Nottingham Forest for the Championship has been corrupted, but I'll make sure for episode 6 that it'll be more, even more in detail than I actually did, and it'll be a bumper episode, so make sure you listen out for that. Should be up, I think, about Tuesday next week, so hope you enjoyed this one. Look forward to having you guys tune in for that one.
It is down. It's four.